The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.
Good morning. You're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, California, streaming online at kuci.org and podcasting on iTunes. Welcome to Fighting for Love. This show will help you turn conflict into collaboration in all your relationships. I'm Lloyd, the show's engineer, and your host is Mari Frank, an attorney mediator since 1985. She's a mediator for the Orange County Superior Court Civil Mediation Panel. Mari's a professor of negotiations and conflict management and has been a certified state bar trainer for over 25 years. To learn more about the show and our great guests, please visit conflicthealing.com. Mari, what's your show about this morning?
Well, Lloyd, today our show is about unseen worlds. And when we really get connected to spirituality and things that just are coincidences, etc., then we know that we are really able to connect with other people and connect with the universe. And so sometimes we love to talk about how spirituality and unseen worlds really relate to fighting for love and turning conflict into collaboration. So today I'm really excited because we have a wonderful guest with us. We have Amazon number one best-selling author Kingsley Guy, who was employed by the South Florida Sun Sentinel newspaper for 30 years, including 23 as editorial page editor. His career included assignments in the Middle East, India, Russia, and China, and he conversed with hundreds of prominent newsmakers, including John McCain, Hillary Clinton, John Glenn, Mikhail Gorbachev, Madeleine Albright, and Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon. And he's been a frequent guest on radio and TV. And he says his life's purpose is to reveal another reality through storytelling. And his seminal work, The Consciousness-Changing Spiritual Memoir, Piercing the Veil, A Skeptical Journalist Discovers Unseen Worlds. And there's a great foreword by Kimberly Mitchell, who's the daughter of the late astronaut Edgar Mitchell. And he, of course, walked on the moon, and so he saw things from a different perspective as well. So we're really excited to have him. And this book just came out, and it's a number one bestseller. So we're just thrilled to have you join us, Kingsley. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, fun. Mm-hmm. So first of all, tell us, you've been a journalist for all these years. Why did you write this particular book?
Well, I was a skeptical journalist for many, many, many years. About 32 years ago, I discovered that I had an addiction to alcohol. And I'm very upfront about it in the book. This isn't a book about recovery from alcoholism, but recovery often entails going on a spiritual journey. And I was faced with a life or death struggle of dealing with this addiction, and I had no choice. I said, okay, I really have no concept of God, of spirituality, but it's life or death, so let's give it a shot. So I embarked on a spiritual journey, and it has shaped my life for the last 32 years. I wrote this book prior to it. I wrote a novel called Queen of the Heavens, and that takes place in ancient Egypt. It's about a little girl born a commoner who grows up to be a queen, actual historical figure. Hmm. And in that, I incorporate some of the spiritual experiences that I had during my life, but I fictionalize them. But I guess in giving book talks on this, I didn't necessarily talk about Egypt. I talked about some of these spiritual experiences, and I found the audiences were absolutely transfixed by them. So I said, well, let's put these down in a book and come out with it. And I hope by doing so that people will read it and be more inclined to talk about some of the experiences they may have had.
Yes, beautiful. I love it. Yeah, so sometimes when you talk about these things, which I've had several myself, that sometimes people look at you like you're nuts. So you have to find your own tribe that will relate.
I think you're absolutely right about a tribe. And I was in the journalist, most skeptical of professions.
Right.
And it was not something that I would talk about very much at all, actually, in the newsroom. Something that only, you know, you talk to your closest friends about. But I'm no longer in journalism. I've been retired for a number of years now. And it's time to come out of the closet. Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. Being an attorney, and I do a lot of speaking engagements, that every once in a while, when I do a program on mindfulness, then I can kind of open up a little bit, but otherwise they're going to think I'm woo-woo and crazy. So, you know, but of course I've got this radio show that I reveal myself, but we'll see. People who listen to it aren't necessarily my colleagues in the law profession. So they listen to my
rather skeptical.
Yeah. They listen to my other show, which is called Privacy Piracy, which is much more related to the privacy in the information age. So this is the one I can have fun and really play with much more. So I'm thrilled that you're joining me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the name of the book is Piercing the Veil, A Skeptical Journalist Discovers Unseen Worlds. Mm-hmm. So why did you call it Piercing the Veil?
Well, it's unseen world, a veil between the dimensions, and how do you go beyond that? The ancients had methods, shamans have methods, the Hindus have methods, how you get through the veil and really experience firsthand some of these unseen worlds. And it happened to me. Some of the synchronicities that took place that charted my life, just absolutely amazing. Some of the events that took place that actually defied the laws of physics as we know them. I'm not saying that it defied the laws of physics. I'm saying they defied the laws of physics as we know them. And there is a veil, I think, between us and the material world and the spiritual world that can be penetrated, and I have penetrated it, and I relate in the book some of the experiences that I had in doing so.
So let's share a couple of those experiences so that my audience can really, you know, get connected with you.
Yeah, one of them, and we mentioned Edgar Mitchell's daughter, Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, I knew fairly well and had some extensive discussions with him. On the way back from the moon, he entered what the Hindus call a state of samadhi, which is a connectedness with a unity, the unity of the universe. It is a transformative experience. I experienced it as well after spending 2 weeks in an ashram in New York State and going through some ceremonies with Brahmin priests. It's an amazing state of consciousness where hard to describe. Actually, it's impossible to actually describe completely. But in my novel, and also in Piercing the Veil, I felt like I could spend eternity in this state. And then I realized I was eternity, just an amazing state of consciousness. And Mitchell experienced it. It launched him on his post-NASA career of investigating the scientific foundation of the spiritual experience. It caused me to explore different realms of different religions and different practices, all of which, by the way, I'm stone cold sober.
Yeah.
some people think you have to be on drugs to get into some of these experiences. No, I have not had anything in my system for 32 years, alcohol or anything.
So, right.
But some amazing states of consciousness that I experienced through going through some of the ritual ceremonies. Most of the ones I went through were related to yoga. But very, very powerful, powerful ceremonies and practices that can take you into altered states of consciousness.
Right, and you talk in your book about experiencing the rising of Kundalini. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about that and what it felt like.
If I had not known what was happening, I would have thought I was in dire medical straits. Probably would have called an ambulance. They'd have taken me to the hospital, done thousands of dollars worth of tests, and told me there was nothing wrong with me, although they might have thought I was a little nuts. But I was up at the ashram in New York, the City Yoga Ashram, and I was lying in bed, and just before falling asleep, I felt a stirring at the base of my spine, and I felt this energy surge come up my spine. I felt as if my chest expanded to double its size, and then whoosh, out the top of my head, out the crown, this energy just left me. And then about 30 seconds later, it happened again. Just an amazing experience. But I'd read about it. I knew about it. Never thought it would happen to me. But thought you'd have to be a yogi at the meditating in the Himalayas for 10 years, 20 years before these events would happen. But it did happen. Fortunately, I knew what it was. So I was able to sit back and enjoy it and feel like I was just floating in an ocean of bliss. Mm. It happened to me a couple of other times, years later, woke me out of a sound sleep. So talk about the subtle body in Eastern religions. Acupuncturists talk about it, the energy channels and the energy movement. And Westerners, Western doctors, very skeptical about such things. But the subtle body does exist. I experienced that movement of the Kundalini. And it is very, very real. We do have a subtle body along with our physical body.
So, Kingsley, had you been doing a great deal of meditation before, within those days when you were at the ashram? Or what do you think brought this on?
Yes, I had a regular meditation practice, still do, and that certainly contributed it. I think being in the atmosphere of the ashram with like-minded people, the energy is just incredible up there, certainly the chanting, the resonance of the chanting that you go through, things of that nature. All of this, I think, contributes to the to these experiences. The samadhi experience, like I said, I went through a series of ceremonies with Brahmin priests. So these techniques that date back thousands and thousands of years are very much a science in many ways, and they work. But it entails practices participating in the practices.
I've been a meditator since I was 19 years old when I learned how to do, Maharishi was teaching transcendental meditation mm-hmm. at that time, and I remember the Beatles were into it, and we had ceremonies at our apartment, when we all became initiated. And I still meditate to this day, but not like I used to. I used to meditate in the morning and the evening. Now I just have time for the morning, but I never miss it. But I remember being in these group meditations where we would actually experience cosmic consciousness, is what they called it, when you are in that altered state where you feel like you're floating and you feel like you're one with the entire room. You literally, astro travel or whatever you want to call it, but you are out of your body. And I still meditate, and every once in a while I have kind of like this deep experience, but I experience some things myself in dreams, piercing the veil when I'm having a dream, speaking with someone from the other side or having something where I feel that I am, maybe in a past life or something. Do you know what I mean? So I think anyone can experience this, but you have to get to that point where you are kind of out of your ego and in a very relaxed state, which I think sleeping, there's parts of sleeping that you could connect with that other side. Don't you think that can happen?
Oh, absolutely. And certain other techniques. When I first started my spiritual adventures, there is a East European psychiatrist named Stan Grof who developed a technique called holotropic breath work, comes out of a yogic tradition. And I went through several experiences with groups doing that and taking us into very, very intriguing locations, consciousness locations, experience. I mean, in it, I experienced, for instance, karmic resolution of having been killed and killing, whether it was past life or what, I don't know. As a soldier, having those experiences, experiencing a sense of rebirth coming down the birth canal. All this done through breathing and other techniques involved in it, but all done totally conscious without any outside stimulant. Just amazing where our minds can go if we're willing to experiment in some of these things and willing to practice some of these things. The state of consciousness you talked about, a profound experience that alters one's perception of existence. I wish more people would talk about it.
Well, I think they are. I think that they are. And I mean, a lot of this stuff you're seeing on TV now, and a lot of doctors, like I remember, you know, I took a full day with Brian Weiss, who wrote Many Lives, Many Masters. You know, mm-hmm. he had been a professor at University of Miami in Florida. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you've got Deepak Chopra, you've got Larry Dossey, you've got a lot of, you know, respectable people that are talking about this and that have experienced, I forgot the other guy's name who I saw speak in person, who literally died. He had a near-death experience and he was, you know, had been a neurosurgeon and he didn't believe in any of this. And then all of a sudden, you know, he experienced it himself going through death and coming back. So I think people are talking about it. And I think, you know, I think it's wonderful that a journalist who is, you know, an investigator into all this and skeptical, you know, that's a lot of people are skeptical. And until they experience it, they just can't relate. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned Brian Weiss. Of course, he was head of psychiatry at Mount Sinai Hospital, which is just down the road from where I live in Fort Lauderdale. I've had several regressions, not with Brian, but with his associate at the Weiss Institute going back years ago.
Yeah.
And very, very profound experiences. And one of the things with Weiss, I mean, past life regressions, hypnotherapists have been doing those for years and years and years. But as you mentioned, Brian Weiss, he was head of psychiatry.
And
for him to come out with that book really took a lot of courage on his part.
Exactly.
One of the reasons that, like I said, I came out of a profession that you don't really talk about these things. And I felt a journalistic obligation, frankly, to write about them at this point in my life. And these things happen. They're very real. Mentioned Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut.
Right.
He went off the reservation. you know, he was a scientist, an MIT graduate, doctorates from MIT, and a pilot, Navy pilot, and he had this profound experience, and it launched him on a whole new post-NASA career, founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences out there in California that's exploring the paranormal and the states of consciousness. Look at the University of Virginia. They're doing studies on reincarnation at the University of Virginia, talking about the possibility of that being true. One of the things Mitchell said and tried to do, and his daughter in the forward to my book talks about taking his scientific and understanding, or his knowledge as a scientist and engineer, and merging it with the wisdom of the ages. And Mitchell believed that we needed a new paradigm where we didn't separate spirituality and the sciences, but created a new paradigm for the 21st century and beyond, that different from the old paradigm where spirituality was spirituality and you left that to the priests and ministers, and science was science and you left that to the scientists, and the two didn't meet. And no, that's not a situation we can accept anymore. Time to create a new paradigm that merges the what we know about science with the wisdom of the ages.
Right, and they discovered the God particle. You know, and so I love that. I watched that on Ancient Aliens and the Geographic Sun, National Geographic, that, we are seeing. And it's interesting because the scientists were spiritual way back when. And you think about the Mayans, right, and all of the ancient, very advanced civilizations. Their high priests were the scientists. They were the astronomers. They were the ones that... So we're kind of coming full circle in the 21st century about science and spirituality kind of joining together. And it makes sense to me. And we're finding more and more scientists that are saying yes, because there's some things that are not explicable. Even Albert Einstein talked about things like that.
Yeah, interesting. Back in the, starting in the 1840s, there was the spiritualist movement in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I deal with it a little bit in my book, because I've been to seances conducted by physical mediums where you have these amazing events take place, things flying around the room, seemingly defying the laws of gravity, things appearing seemingly out of nowhere. And a lot of people consider it all fraudulent. I do not. Certainly you have frauds involved in some of it, but not all.
Right.
And this was quite a movement back in the late 19th, early 20th century. And certain scientists at the time said, well, we're going to study it with the expectations they'd be able to debunk it. One of them was Alfred Russel Wallace, whose name is on the Origin of Species with Charles Darwin.
Hmm.
And he investigated it and found, no, these things happen. This is not fakery. Another was William Crookes, who invented the vacuum tube and discovered the element thallium. And he was part of the Royal Society in Britain, and all the other scientists said, Crookes is going to study it. He's going to prove it's all fraud and all fake. And Crookes went out and studied it and came back and said, no, this is not all fraud and not all fake. And his work provided some of the most graphic illustrations of what was going on. And they did a scientific approach on this as well, measurements of weighing of the apparitions and such, measurements of them, very scientific approach. And all this data is out there that these top scientists studied back then. So I think we've come also with the invention of the electric light, the invention of the television, the invention of radio and such.
Internet.
And internet, we're able to transfer information more quickly, but in another respect, sometimes you lose sight of some of the spiritual dynamics that people in a previous age that didn't have all these amenities were experiencing. For instance, you walk out the door today in a city and you wouldn't know that a universe exists. But back before the electric light, if you walked out the door and you looked at the sky, you were struck with a whole different concept of the cosmos and what most of us are struck with now.
Right.
So it's... Shakespeare's Hamlet, there's more to heaven and earth, Horatio, than is dreamt of in your philosophy. And I've certainly experienced things that I never would have dreamed I'd experience back early in my life.
You know, people talk about, you know, I know you talk about the synchronicities in your life, and people talk about coincidences. And I remember reading Bernie Siegel, the cancer surgeon, who said, somebody gave him a card and it said, "Coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous." And I just thought that was so wonderful. And you talk about synchronicities in your life, and, you know, you have to like really be open to it instead of just say, "Oh, that's just a coincidence." Mm-hmm. You know, talk a little bit. We don't have a lot of time, but I want you to, we have about three more minutes, but I wanted to just have you share maybe one of the synchronicities in your life so people understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, when I was a very young man, I went through India. I had been a student in the Far East, and I was in the, had no spiritual sense, but I was in the holy city of Banaras, or Varanasi. It's also called on the Ganges River. And I was standing outside a temple that I wasn't allowed into because I wasn't a Hindu, but an old woman gives me a fistful of flower petals. I don't know what's happening. She takes my hand and she puts it into the mouth of a sacred cow that is passing, and it gobbled up the petals, and I just felt this incredible surge of energy with the tongue of the cow and my palm of my hand, and just felt total blissful. And I made a pledge right there. I will return someday to this exact spot and feed flower petals to a sacred cow. I made that pledge. 20 years later, and I'm starting my, I'm discovering I was alcoholic, and I'm on my spiritual journey, just starting out, maybe 6 months sober, and I said, now it's time to go back to India and honor my pledge. And I went back, and I saw the poverty and so much in India that is contradictory, the poverty being intense. And I lost that spiritual sense that I had had before I went over. But I got to Banaras, and I am just having events that are just shattering my spiritual serenity and causing me to question the existence of God and the worth of what I was doing. And I went to the Ganges, and I'm on my last legs here, and I go to float a devotional candle in the river, and a few people ahead of me put theirs in, and they float out several paces from shore, and I put my candle in the river, and I splash my hands, and my candle goes out about 3 feet and starts coming back at me, and I just had this thought, my God, I've come halfway around the world to have a spiritual experience, and I can't even float a candle on the Ganges properly. And at that exact moment, a 3-inch frog surfaced from the muddy Ganges, grabbed the plate that my candle was on, and swam it out to where the others were and deposited it there. And that it was that event that said, told me, hey, I'm on the right track.
Right.
And that synchronicity got me into a practice of yoga and got me to the ashrams and got me all these experiences. And then really quickly, about 28 years later, I'm in meditation, and I have this message, visit the graves of your paternal grandparents. Now, I hadn't visited those graves in 50 years. But yet it was a strong, strong message, and I wasn't about to go up and do it, but next time I got to Cleveland, where I grew up, I would do it. And a few months later, I ended up in Cleveland. I went to their graves, and I went over and looked down, and I saw what looked like a leaf on the grave, and I bent down to brush it off, and lo and behold, it was a tree frog.
Oh.
It hopped off the gravestone into the grass like the frog
years
earlier had done in the Ganges. Yeah. And that launched me into another investigation of certain things that resulted in amazing experiences in these seances that I attended. So these synchronicities, you know, the frog in my life has been very important, but many other synchronicities that got me on track.
Well, we are just out of time, so just give your website and it's time to go.
Okay. Okay. The website is kingsleyguy.com. The book is Piercing the Veil, and I've also written a novel, Queen of the Heavens. They're available on Amazon. You can get them through my website, kingsleyguy.com.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and keep up the wonderful work. Thank you so much. You've been listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org on the web. I'm Mari Frank. Join us every Monday morning at 8:30 a.m. and visit our website at conflicthealing.com. Thanks.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.